Let's go. I love these questions today.
There it is. I know they're good ones today.
Yep.
Good ones. All right, let me scroll to the top here. Yes, it's me. I start. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Thanks for tuning in to Make Me Smart, the daily edition. This is Wednesday, so we're doing our thing that we do, trying to make sense of the way today seems to be happening in our lives. Help me, Molly Wood.
I'm just like grateful that it's What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. I've decided that Wednesdays are one of my new favorites because you guys, our darling listeners, do the work for us by bringing up the topics, and I don't have to do my worst part of every day, which is go to Google News and wait for the inevitable wave of sadness and rage.
What is happening out there today?
Yes. It feels good. We just get to help you. So What Do You Want to Know Wednesday?
That's right. And we're halfway through.
Let's do it.
Okay. Yes, so we are going to what is the biggest question on a lot of people's minds these days. What is going on with Congress and the state of the American economy, specifically the expanded unemployment benefits that expire in a week? The last checks go out next week. Also, federal eviction protections expire next week. So there's a lot going on. And the question comes to us along those lines from Brianna McReynolds. Here you go.
Hi, Kai and Molly. It's Brianna from Phoenix. My question for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday is there something I should know about how sessions work in Congress? Because they've known for quite a while that the unemployment benefits were going to end and that urgent action would be needed to not send the economy and, 20 million people off a cliff. But it seems like they waited until the last minute. Was this on purpose or was there no way to avoid this? Any information you have would be greatly appreciated.
Oh, my goodness.
Brianna
I love that. She can't see that.
The silent rictus of hysterical sob laughter.
I know.
I am making right now because.
So, look, a couple of things. Yes. Number one. Congressional calendars are set a year or so in advance, right? A congressional session goes for 2 years. We are in the second half of the session because we're coming up on Election Day. But that's not what you're asking. What you're asking is about congressional vacations.
I know, I'm like, bless. It's not
about
sessions.
I'm getting there. Come on. I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Okay,
it's about vacations. And the summer recess that the House and the Senate just came back from this past Monday. And they went on vacation knowing full well, as Brianna said, that all of this bad stuff was going to happen at the end of July and that when they got back, they would have something like 8 legislative days to fix it. So we should be clear what's going on here. House Democrats passed a $3.5 trillion plan like 6 weeks ago because they saw this coming. It has to be said that Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans are the ones who have waited until it's going to be too late. Because, as McConnell said yesterday, he was asked whether this thing was going to get done by the end of the month so that all these bad things wouldn't happen. And he laughed and he said no. So they knew it was coming and they're letting it happen anyway. And that's not a political statement. It's a statement of fact and calendar. So that's that. That's that.
Yeah. I mean, it is possible that they disagreed about the severity or were operating on the magical thinking that the virus would go away and the economy would come right back and all the reopening was going to work. I mean, I think there was clearly some wait and see gambling that went on there. But it's a big gamble and a lot of people are going to lose. No doubt about it.
For sure. For sure.
No doubt. Yep. Next up, Paul Venture, like lose seems like such a mild word to even use there.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, Brianna, we're with you.
Yeah.
Up next, Paul Ventura wrote in to say, I'm seeing a lot of 401k info trending on Twitter today saying it's no longer a good investment. Why? And I'm so happy that you brought this up because I've literally had this link open all day long. Why? What happened? Was it just this one Bloomberg article? Go, help.
Well, I don't know, but let me just say, please do not take investing advice or retirement advice from Twitter. Please. Please, 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 please.
That's true. That is very true.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody's financial circumstances are different. Generally speaking, 401ks work to your advantage, compounding over time, all that good stuff. But there are some structural changes in this economy, as outlined in at least one Bloomberg article that we found, talking about why it might not be great, as great as it once was. But look, save for your retirement. But, you know.
And I think the Bloomberg article to address the sort of the substance of that is what seems to have prompted all this conversation. It was pretty controversial and it caused a bunch of people to talk about it. It was fully an opinion piece. It looks like it was from scrolling down to see who wrote it, because somebody was like, oh, it's from a company that wants to. It's from a company. And Twitter maintains that that company wants to push legislation that stops companies from giving you a 401k. So it's a little unclear. But I think we're with Kai on this one. Like, definitely save for your retirement.
Yeah.
Full stop.
And don't take investment advice from Twitter. Don't take investment advice from me. get a hold of somebody who knows what they're doing. My wife handles all of our money. All of it. For a reason. Sorry. Just wanted to throw that in there. That disclaimer.
I know. That's like my favorite. What I do think is interesting is that this is not the first article to come out over the last, 6-7 days, taking some aim at retirement accounts. You tweeted kind of an interesting piece.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Holy cow.
Right. Was it the Washington Post?
Yeah.
We'll have to go find it in your, I love your house.
I have to do it.
You
got to
yell back.
Hey, let me hang on 2 seconds, babe. I'll be right there. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, I had to text my child to be like, can you stop rage pounding on your keyboard right now? I'm recording. I can hear you. I know you're losing at Fortnite. Fortnite is back. Yeah. P.S. What's up
with that? I said somebody else was telling me about Satara. Satara's kid is playing Fortnite.
Oh, really? That's how bored they are.
I don't know.
Like all the other games.
I don't know if she wants that on the pod, but you know.
She's got the power. Anyway. She can take it out of her. Anyway, I think it was a Washington Post piece by an economist. And it said, like, if you really want to unlock financial stimulus, let people access tax-free or penalty-free the, like, $29 trillion, something like that, that's locked up in retirement accounts.
Right.
But
and I'm like...
And I don't know. Yeah. I would love to take some of that money out penalty-free and hopefully buy a house, but apparently that's not going to happen either because everybody is buying a house and there's still none to buy. But, like...
Yes.
I do think that there is something, if there's a third piece, it'll be a trend. It is interesting that this is the second opinion piece to come out in a couple days to sort of be like, maybe retirement accounts should go away.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, we're just going to keep an eye on this.
Yeah. Let's actually, right? Because who knows? We'll spot something. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, you were early on coronavirus being the plague, so there was that. I need to make a correction here. It was not Fortnite for Satara's kid. It was Minecraft, just so we know.
Right. There we go.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question, and I don't know how to pronounce his first name. Topher?
Topher,
T-O-P-H-E-R?
Yeah.
Topher?
I dated a Topher once in college. Probably not this one.
You should have gotten this. Well, one hopes. Topher Soltis wrote in, and here's what he wants to know. I'd like to hear more about executive salary caps and how they might be structured. I work in theater, and a group of Black and indigenous and people of color professionals demanded that executive salaries be capped at 10 times the yearly salary of the lowest paid full-time staff member. I've also heard of efforts to peg executive salaries to median salary. Both of those are problematic in that they ignore company size. I would love to hear from an expert about what the latest thinking is. Yes, us too, because I'm not an expert on executive compensation. I have some thoughts, which I will happily share, but I'm an expert by no means.
Yeah, that's me neither, but I do think this is a really interesting and provocative concept. I have a friend who brought this up to me like 15 years ago or something, during the about 12 years ago in the 2008 financial crisis, and she was literally the first person I had ever heard pose this idea, and she was like, what if there was just a cap, like a moral cap on executive salary? And actually, in further discussions over the years, we realized that you could literally cap executive salaries, like CEO pay, at 1,000 times, and the Fortune 500 companies, at 1,000 times what the lowest paid employee in that company makes, and it would still be less than what they make now. Did that make sense? Like, in most cases, they are making more than 1,000 times what they're... Yeah. But there's no business rationale for it. So,
right.
Kai's line.
I just want to back you up. No. I just want to back you up to the way you set this up, which was there should be a moral cap on it. And now comes my business line. Right.
Here it comes.
Capitalism
Go.
Doesn't care whether you live or die. Right.
Boom.
And so as long as the market's going to bear it, Jamie Dimon's going to get $23 million a year, right? Because he
controls
the board of directors.
Yes.
I'm not saying any of this is right. I'm not saying any of this is right, but that's the way it is. And I think, you know, we could get Bob Reich on here, although, you know, well, anyway, lots of people. Lots of people. Well, but I love Bob, but he has a theme, and he is diligent in sticking to it, which is not to say it's not valid. It's just every time you talk to him, it's the same theme. Look, one of the other problems, sorry, and this is where I was going to go with my thought, and then we'll move on, is not the absolute amount of executive compensation, but the way it is structured. And the way it is structured involves sometimes stock-based incentives, which leads the CEO to do things that will boost the stock price to thus boost his own compensation, as opposed to saying, here, Mr. Dimon, is $1 million a year. That's your salary. Now do what's best for this company and for its customers, right? Which is not, those are not always the same thing. That's that.
Yep, that's absolutely
that's
true.
What I got.
And ideally, okay. I don't know, maybe the CEO pay is not the problem. It's everybody under the CEO. It's the wages that have essentially been stuck for 40 years.
Right.
So maybe those go up and then there just isn't as much money. You know, it's, I don't know, maybe it's a self-correcting ship. But yes, set, bump, spike. Bump, set, spike. That's what happened there with the capitalism line. Yep. Sucked at basketball. Hate it. Very aggressive coaching sport. I don't really respond well to that. Volleyball was my jam. Yep. Loved it.
Learned something new every day. All right.
I also played rugby for a semester of college.
Doesn't surprise me at all. Does not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
Didn't work for you?
Well, no. It's so painful. It's a very painful sport, turns out. One time I got a bruise that took a year to heal. A year! A girl stepped right on my thigh with her cleat. It hurt for a year. Okay, we're moving on.
We're going to get emails from rugby players. Anyway.
I know, they're going to be like, you.
Oh, my goodness.
I played for 6 months, people. It was plenty.
There you go.
We're just rambling. Okay, hilariously, I'm going to tell you after this that my rambling is totally related to this topic. Here is a voice memo from listener Roger Carlson.
Okay. Hi, Kai and Molly. I'm Roger Carlson from Redondo Beach, California. Here's what I want to know. Did NAFTA create Mexico because U.S. production went to corn syrup and Mexico stayed with cane sugar? And does USMCA put it at risk? Thanks for the podcast.
Wow. I don't know, Roger.
I don't know any of that, but Sam did a bunch of research. And I just want you to know that at 3:02, I came and looked at the rundown and I saw the words Mexico and the Pavlovian response caused me to go get one. And I've been drinking a Mexico since 3:16, which is why I'm literally just babbling right now because
that explains
caffeine and sugar.
That explains a little bit of what's going on here.
Sam Anderson, who did all the research to answer this question. Probably not, he writes, because the U.S. exports tons of corn syrup to Mexico. In 2016, for example, Mexico bought over 80% of U.S. fructose or corn syrup. That is crazy. NAFTA, crazy. As a result, by the way, due to the corn syrup situation, increased obesity in Mexico and Canada. So that's bad. We don't really know why, but according to Reuters from 2017, for sugar buyers like Coca-Cola, a failure to come to a new agreement on NAFTA or USMCA, sugar producers were worried during that negotiation because they thought it could disrupt supplies and drive up prices. Anyway, so none of that answers why Mexico is sugar and not corn syrup. All I know is I am grateful and nothing better screw it up because it's the best.
Nothing will. Do not mess with Molly Wood and her Mexico. All right, we're done. That's it for us on a What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. Send your questions, comments, anything at all. Voice memos, emails, we'll read them. You read them. Take your pick. Make me smart at marketplace.org. We are back tomorrow with Hollowed Out Shell Thursday.
Oh, yay. Wait.
Yay?
That doesn't seem like the right reaction at all.
No, maybe you're a little,
I guess at
a
least
little high
be
on your Mexico.
Thursday.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't have lunch, just the Mexico, so probably. All right, you take this one.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. Ethan Parrott is our video intern. Writer-producer Erica Phillips does our smart speaker skills, also our newsletters. Sign up, by the way, marketplace.org/newsletters.
So good. Today's program was engineered by Drew Dostad. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand, Jack of All Trades, Satara Nieves, Jill of All Trades? Satara of All Trades? Jill. The senior vice president and general manager for the Knots is Deborah Clark.
What's funny is nobody's asked us why we keep saying it.
Nope, not a peep.
Ah, well.